Masech the Tainis, Daf Chav Tes and Mebeis, Taister and Maschel and Rav Papa, Hilka Chai Bar Yisrael, the Islay Dina, Bahadei Nochri, Lishtamet, Vechule. The Gemara, quoting the Mishnah, states that Mishanich Masav, Mematim Besimcha, that when Av enters, we decrease happiness, we decrease joy. And on that, the Gemara comments that the Maschel of Tosfos, recording Rav Papa's statement, that as a result of that, a Jew who has some kind of judgment with a non-Jew should try to get out of it, to delay it until next month. The Vechulei of Tosis is, L'shtamet minei ba'av derea mazle, because it has a bad mazle. V'limsi nafshi ba'adr, the Gemara continues, that let him avail himself to have that judgment with the Nachri during Adar, debori mazle, because there the mazle is very good. How are those two statements interconnected? Why should the fact that because when Av enters Memat and Besimcha lead to the fact that a Jew should try to avoid some kind of court case with a non-Jew? So to that, Tosfos comment, Pirish, meaning, or in this case, because, Mishum da Omer la'el megalgalin chova le'yom achayev. Because the Gemara in the previous Amud, in describing how do we know that the second Beis HaMikdash's Churban occurred also on Tisha B'Av, just like the first, which we know from Sukkim and Tanakh, because of this principle that Megalglan Chov L'Yom HaChayiv, that Menashamayim, they arrange that bad things happen on a day that is already established as an inauspicious day. We discussed in the previous Amud that first of all, the Chet HaMeragim occurred, so unfortunately we ourselves made it into an inauspicious day by sinning on that day. And we mentioned from a diak from the Tosfos, as well as the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that it sounds like already from the beginning of time, that particular month of Av with that date was already an inauspicious occasion. So since it is a time that's designated for punishment or pronos, and in terms of the context of the Gemara, as a result of that, it led to so many tragedies. And as a result of those tragedies, Mishnich Nasav Mematim Besimcha, but it's all rooted in the fact that it's an inauspicious month, at least up until the 9th of Av, and especially the day of the 9th of Av itself. So that's what Tosfos' comment, that during Av, the Gemara says we should avoid a judgment with an Achri, because you're more likely to lose then than in other months. There's an interesting debate among the poskim as to whether this halacha of avoiding a court case is relevant for the entire month of Av, or only until after Tisha B'Av, or perhaps only till Yudalat Av, because once we already have the 15th of Av, so that's the last Mishnah, that's already a happy occasion, and that already represents a good mazel. As a postscript to the Gemara that Tosfos are commenting on, the Mishnah had said, Mishnah Chazav, Mematim Besimcha, and the Gemara doesn't really explain what that means, to be Mematim Besimcha. So Rav Papa says that you should avoid a judgment with a non-Jew, but that doesn't seem to be an expression of lessening joy. That's because it's an inauspicious time. As we noted in our presentation in Tosfos, they're both rooted in the same thing, Ramayit B'Simcha, because of all the tragedies that occurred, and those tragedies keep occurring in those times as a result of the fact that it's an inauspicious time. So because of that same idea, that it's an inauspicious time, one shouldn't have a judgment with a non-Jew, but not having a judgment with a non-Jew is not an expression of lessening Simcha. So, how do we lessen Simcha? Mishnech Nasav. So that seems to be a sugi in Yevamos, which is recorded in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tov Kuf Nun Aleph, in terms of the fact that one should avoid binyanim of Simcha, building in a joyous way, household renovations, etc., that are not crucial for repair, and other such halachos that are relevant to Simcha, getting married, and so on and so forth. But our Gemara, interestingly, does not discuss that. That's a sugi in Yevamos. Tazdir Masel Shel Tapuchim. Since the Gemara, in the context of the Mishnah that tells us that we should lessen joy in Av, quotes the statement of Rav Yehuda, the son of Rav Shmuel Bar Shelas, in the name of Rav, that expands the ruling of the Mishnah and contrasts it with another month. Kishem Shemishanichnas Av Mematim Besimcha, Kach Mishanichnas Adar Marbim Besimcha. Just as we lessen joy from the time of the entrance, from the beginning of Av, so too we increase joy from the time of the entrance of Adar. Famous statement. Interestingly, that's only quoted here in Masechta Tainis and not in Masechta Megillah. Of course, made many songs. The second half of the statement, Mishan Nichnasav Marim Besimcha. So the Gemara quotes other statements of Rav Yehuda, Berei de Rav Shmuel, Bar Shelas, in the name of Rav. So the statement that Tosfos is commenting on is the Pasuk, that Yitzchak Avinu pronounces to the one he thought was Esav, but was really Yaakov, who was wearing the Bigdei Chamudos, the desired coveted clothing, which traditionally, midrashically, came from Adam Rishon, and that gave the scent of Gan Eden. So Yitzchak Avinu comments, Vayomer Ei Reach Bani Kereach Soda Shabercho Hashem. See the scent of my son, that's like the scent of the field that Hashem has blessed, a reference to Gan Eden. So in that we have Rav Yehuda Breider Shmuel Bar Shelas in the name of Rav commenting, Kereach Soda Shel Tapuchim. It's like the scent of a field of tapuach trees. And that was the scent of Gan Eden. So Tosis, in a rather cryptic comment, writes, Shel Tapuchim? What is meant by Tapuchim? So of course we would translate as apples. So Tosis comment, no, Yesh Meforshim, some explain Tapuchim, Kereach Esrogim. That this scent of the apples is like the scent of Esrogim. So Tosis is identifying Tapuchim as Esrogim. Now, one could say, because Esrogim have a wonderful scent, but apples also have a nice scent. So that can't be the sole proof. So on the margin, they point out to look at the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Pei Chesem and Aleph, where the Gemara also speaks about Tapuchim, and there is a more elaborate tosis in the name of Rabbeinu Tam that explains why, in his view, the Gemara's Tapuchim in Shabbos refers to Esrogim, and here, tosis, very briefly, is using that definition as well, that Tapuchim doesn't mean the more common definition of apples, but rather Esrogim. The very fact that Tosis had to redefine the word Tapuchim obviously meant that in his day, the word Tapuchim was associated with what we call Tapuchim, namely apples. So, that very briefly, that Gemara in Shabbos quotes a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Ketapuach batzei hayar kein dodi bein habanim, that the proverbial dod is described as being similar to a tapuach, Ba'atzei Hayar, in the trees of the forest. In the context of the Gemara points out that the Jewish people recited Naaseh before Nishma, that the Jewish people committed to doing the mitzvos even before they heard what they were. The famous slogan, Naaseh v'Nishma. So the Gemara points out that just like the tapuach tree, the fruits grow before the leaves in an unusual way. Normally the leaves come first and then the fruits. So here also in an unusual way, normally we would expect the Jews to have said Nishma v'Naaseh. First let's hear what the mitzvahs are and only then we'll decide whether we'll commit to them, which is what the nations of the world did when Hashem brought them the Torah. But no, the Jews said, no, Naaseh v'Nishma. We're ready to accept it, whatever it is, because we trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He has our best interest in mind. So there Rabbeinu Tam asks that concerning an apple tree, that's just not true. An apple tree, like most fruit trees, the leaves grow first and then the fruits. And then there's a season and the apples are plucked, or the remaining ones fall off and the leaves fall off. And then a new season, the leaves grow first and then the fruit. So how could the Gemara testify something against the reality? So Tosis points out that it's clear that the Gemara is not referring to what we call a tapuach. So that for his proposal is that it's an esrog. And he quotes the Targum on Shir HaShirim, and the Pasuk, Re'ech HaPech Ketapuchim, the Targum is Kerecha de Esroga. And that he points out that an esrog, being a citrus fruit, is on the tree from the past year, if it hadn't been plucked off, even during the new season of the next year. So, in that sense, the fruit is there on the tree after the old leaves had fallen off, and the new leaves grow. So it's Pirio, Kodem, La'olav, the fruit comes before the leaves. So Tosis here also is assuming that the Gemara's usage of the word tapuach does not mean what we call a tapuach, namely an apple, but rather an esrog. One could ask, though, they are different contexts, that there Tosis maintain that the tapuach means esrog, because that's the only thing that works out with the Gemara, because the Gemara says that the fruit comes before the leaves, and that's not true for an apple tree. But in our Gemara, where Yitzchak was referring to an aromatic tree, maybe it was the tapuach tree, the apple tree, but we refer to it as a tapuach. So perhaps the Yesh Meforshim are reasoning as follows, even though it doesn't directly follow from Rabbeinu Tam's identification of tapuach as being an esrog in the Gemara on Shabbos, but for a different reason. Because the Re'ech HaSod Asher Berech HaShem midrashically refers to Gan Eden. And of all the trees in Gan Eden, why would the apple be singled out? So there are various midrashic opinions as to what the Eitz Hadas Tov HaRa was. Whether it was wheat, which then was in the form of a tree, or whether it was a fig tree, or whether it was a grape vine. And one opinion is that it was an esrog. So the word tapuach, which literally means blown up, tafuach, doesn't seem to match with any of those other fruits. perhaps a te'ena, but that has a different word associated with it, te'ena, fig. But an esrog is fattened out in the middle, similar to a tapuach, what we call an apple. So of the trees that are associated with the Garden of Eden, specifically the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra, the only one that seems to match the etymological definition of tapuach is esrog. So maybe that's what motivated the Eish Mefarshim to explain the word tapuach here as well as referring to an esrog. I saw that some note that it cannot be that throughout Shas, the word tapuach always means esrog, because there's a Mishnah in the beginning of Masechta Maisros, the first parak, I think maybe Mishnah Dalet, that refers to tapuchim and esrogim. So clearly there, tapuchim does not mean esrogim. It must mean something else, and likely it's referring to our apples. So the suggestion I saw quoted was that in the language of the Torah, of the Psukim and Tanakh, especially Shir HaShirim, when it refers to a tapuach, it's referring to a srogim. But in the language of Chazal, and not quoting a Pasuk and Tanakh, so there refers to our translation of tapuach, namely apples. If so, it's possible to suggest that our Tosis does not need an independent proof, as we suggested earlier from the fruits of Gan Eden, specifically the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra, that tapuach here means esrog. Maybe he proved it from the proof Rabbeinu Tam had from that Gemara in Shabbos, with the additional assumption that everywhere in Tanakh, that tapuach always means esrog, and never means apple. As a postscript to this Tosis, I heard many times from a Rebbe Rav Shechter Shlita, that perhaps because of this confusion as to whether tapuach means apple or esrog, and Tosis concluding that at least in the biblical language it means esrog, so maybe that's what led to this myth that the forbidden fruit of the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra is so often presented as an apple. Whereas in reality, that's one opinion in the Medrash, that it's an esrog. So perhaps because of the confusion of the usage of the term tapuach in the Gemara, when quoting Psukim in Tanakh, it means esrog, that led to a reverse association of the Eitz Hadas being an apple. I saw quoted that maybe a more basic explanation is that in the Latin translation of the Bible, that they use the word M-A-L-U-M, which when pronounced malum means apple, and when pronounced malum means evil. So in the translation of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, they translated evil as malum, and people misread it as malum, and therefore associated it as being an apple. Tais de Maskel Katsri de Rav. The Gemara quoted a machlokes between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes as to whether concerning the prohibition of washing clothes during the Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, the week that Tisha B'Av falls out in. So Rav Nachman maintains that the prohibition is to launder in order to wear, but to launder in order to use after the period of time of prohibition is over, so that would be mutter. And if Sheshes tells no, the prohibition is against laundering itself, even if you're laundering for the purpose of wearing it after the prohibited time period. And one of the proofs that Rav Sheshes seduces to his Shita is the Vatli Katsri Devei Rav, that the Katsri Devei Rav, which Tosis, as we shall see, following Rashi, translates as the laundrymen of Rav's household, were Batel. They didn't work at all during the Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, and that indicates that they weren't laundering not only to wear during that week, but even for after that week. So that would be a proof to Rav Sheshes. So Tosis just comments, A, on what Katsri Devei Rav means, and B, why they have such an unusual kind of title. Katsri Devei Rav, Pirish, meaning Kovsin Habgadim, the launderers of the clothing. Ulechach Kori Lu Katsri, and that's why they are referred to as Katsri, Al Shem, Shemekatsrin Abagodim Ayidei Rechitz Tamayim, that they caused the clothing to shrink as a result of washing them. Rashi explains very similarly. Tosdu Maslam Ishainlo Alakolak Echad Mutalachavis Vemoid. One who only has one garment is allowed to launder it during Chol Hamoed. The Gemara tangentially brought up this leniency that is quoted by Rabbi Yochanan, as quoted by the Gemara in Moed Katan, in an analysis of the machlokas between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes. The Mishnah had stated that you're allowed to do laundry on Thursday on Yom Chamishi because of Kavod Shabbos. And as elucidated later by a Braisa, we're referring to the possibility of Tisha B'Av falling out on Friday, which doesn't fall out in our calendar that way. So if it would be prohibited to launder during the week of Tisha B'Av, so we wouldn't have clean clothes for Shabbos. So the Rabbanan permitted the rabbinic prohibition against laundering for Kavod Shabbos, that on Thursday you could launder the clothes for after Tisha B'Av that fell out on Friday that year for the Shabbos afterward. So doing the math, that is what's called L'chabes El Haniach, you're laundering for after Tisha B'Av. And the only reason it's allowed is because of Kavod Shabbos. But to launder for after Tisha B'Av, if it wouldn't be because of Kavod Shabbos, it would be Aser. So that's what the Gemara proves, that Rav Sheshes is correct, that even that's prohibited against Rav Nachman. And Rav Nachman defends himself by saying that we're talking about a unique situation of someone who only has one garment. In general, you're allowed to do laundry for after Tisha B'Av in the view of Rav Nachman. But here, we're talking about someone who only has one garment, and it's already Thursday, and if he's not going to launder it today, he's not going to have it for Shabbos. But if he needs to launder it for Shabbos, since he only has one garment, he's going to have to put it back on after he washes it. So he's actually going to ultimately be laundering and wearing during the week that Tisha B'Av falls out in. And that normally would be prohibited. L'chabes v'lilbosh, to launder in order to wear. But since the only way to get it clean for Shabbos is to launder it now and then to wear it for a few hours now on Thursday, that act is mutter, an act that normally would have been prohibited to wear it during the week of Tisha B'Av, because there's a kavod Shabbos involved, because basically it's going to be basically clean, even though he will have worn it a little bit on Thursday, 2 days before Shabbos, but it'll basically be clean for Shabbos. So in that context, the Gemara tangentially brought up the statement of Rabbi Yochanan concerning Chol HaMoed, that someone who only has one garment is allowed to launder on Chol HaMoed. What emerges directly from our Gemara, and that's pointed out by the Ramban in Taras Adam, and then quoted by the Tur, and later in the Shulchan Aruch, and all the poskim, that on Chol HaMoed, one who only has one garment is allowed to launder it, even though normally we're not allowed to do laundry on Chol HaMoed. But in the week of Tisha B'Av, even one who only has one garment is still prohibited to launder it, if not for some kula of Kavod Shabbos, which again doesn't really come up in our calendar because of the fact that Tisha B'Av doesn't fall out on Friday. So, Tosis comments on this tangential topic that the Gemara brings up concerning the halachas of Chol HaMoed. So, on Chol HaMoed, it's well known that there are two rabbinic prohibitions that Yishayin point out should have been okay based on the rules and regulations of what kinds of forms of labor are mutter during Chol HaMoed. One of them is Sorach HaMoed, the Maisa Hedyot, if it's for the purpose of the Yomtif, if it's done in a non-professional way. So haircuts, at least in a non-professional way, and laundering, at least in a non-professional way, should have been mutar, but nonetheless, they are both prohibited for reasons that are similar to things that come up in Masechta Tainis concerning the Mamados. But sometimes we prohibit, when people enter into some kind of festive occasion or formal occasion, so we want them to enter into that period of time in a respectable way. So on Yom Tov, we want people to have taken haircuts and have fresh clothing beforehand because of Kavod Yom Tov. Same concerning the Mamados, when they are davening for the acceptance of the Korbanos, that they should take haircuts and do laundry earlier. But for Kavod Shabbos, that is a permit on Thursday. So Chol HaMoed, there's a prohibition to take haircuts and then do laundry, and there's no heter of Kavod Shabbos, because it's supposed to have been done before. So there, Rabbi Yochanan comments that if one only has one garment, the Chacham didn't impose that gzera. So, a little bit of more background before we explain the Tosfos. The Mishnah in the third parak of Masechta Moed Katna, where this prohibition is recorded, starts with the exceptions to the rule of Elam Agalchin, that's the name of the third parak. These people are allowed to take haircuts on Chol HaMoed, and a related group are allowed to do laundry, and basically we're dealing with situations of an onus demuchach, a situation where they couldn't have taken the haircut or done the laundry beforehand, and it's evident to everybody that they're in that situation, such as someone who was freed from prison, or someone who came from a sea voyage, where it's well known that that was the case. So in that, Rabbi Yochanan comments that someone with one garment also is allowed to launder his clothes. So the Gemara asks on that extension of the list of exceptions that Rabbi Yochanan makes as follows. The Gemara had a question that should we allow someone who was busy seeking out something that he lost on Erev Yom Tov and therefore didn't have a chance to take a haircut or do laundry. So should he be able to do those activities on Chol HaMoed? And the Gemara points out that since it's only subjectively known by him that he was an ones and he couldn't do those activities on Erev Yom Tov, and the world does not know, so therefore we have to prohibit it, and therefore it is insufficiently similar to the exceptions to the rule given by the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, if that's true, how could Rabbi Yochanan allow someone who only has one garment? Not everyone knows that he only has one garment. So it is that piece of Gemara that Tosis then picks up with, and based on the answer the Gemara gives, wants to paskin that that ruling of Rabbi Yochanan no longer applies. Taisus has two parts. First, the discussion of whether the ruling of Rabbi Yochanan of someone with only one garment can launder the clothes in Chol HaMoed still applies with Zman HaZeh. He concludes that no. And secondly, listing an additional exception that's not mentioned by the Gemara Bavli, and that is the laundering of baby's clothing, or perhaps by extension, children's clothing. So we begin. Taisus writes, of a Tvul Yom, Beferek El Magalchin, Tvul Yom presumably refers to the Masechta Tvul Yom, or perhaps the Perek of Tvul Yom, which is a Perek in Zvachim. On the margin, they point out that the topic of laundering in Chol HaMoed appears in neither place, that they correct the Girsa to Masechta Chulin. How Chulin became Tvul Yom, somewhat of a question. Maybe Tvul Yom or Perek in Zvachim, and that was somehow the connection, because Zvachim is the nearby Chulin in Shas to some extent. But either way, it's a Gemara Chulin, specifically Daf Kuf Zayin Mebeis, which has the parallel sugya to the headquarters in Perek El Megalachin and Masechta Moed Katan. It reads as follows. The Gemara, that the Gemara states, L'taymeich, Had Amar Abasi, Amar B'yechanan, Mishayin Lo Elach Alakachad, V'chulei. According to your logic, that which Rabbi Yochanan allows laundering on Chol HaMoed for someone who only has one garment. So the context of that Gemara is, as we said earlier, in the Gemara in Moed Katan, and there's a parallel sugya in Chulin, but we'll focus on the context of the Gemara in Moed Katan, that someone who lost the lost object and was looking for an Erev Yom Tov, and therefore didn't have time to take care of the launder, is not allowed to do so on Chol HaMoed. And Abaye used the expression that Yomru kol asrikin asurin v'srike baisus mutarin, meaning that all the matzos are prohibited. The matzos is referring to some sugim psachim where the matzos are made in some kind of fancy way where they have all kinds of shapes, and we're worried that it was made in a way that became chametz. But the ones who know to do it quickly with some kind of mold, that's called the baisus people. So maybe those matzahs should be okay because they're not going to become chametz. And we don't say that because people get confused. And this seems to be an example of what we know on halacha is lo plug, that we don't make a distinction between, even if the particular reason for the halacha doesn't apply, we still apply the halacha because it's going to lead to confusion. So here also, we cannot allow the person who was busy finding the lost object on Erev Yom Tov to take a haircut or do laundry on Chol HaMoed, because people will think that, oh, suddenly he has a heter, so other people should also have a heter. So to that, Tosfos now continue the presentation of the Gemara. The Parich, the Gemara asks, Yomru kol achalukim asurim, that all the garments may not be laundered, l'chabes b'chol HaMoed, to launder on Chol HaMoed, b'chol ekzeh muter, and this garment of the one who only has one garment is allowed, and they're not really going to know necessarily that he has only one garment. Umetareitz, and the Gemara answers that no, that there, everyone's going to know that he only has one garment, and therefore there's no reason to make ekzeh on him. It's similar to someone who left prison, or came from a sea voyage, where everyone knows, umetareitz, and here's the Gemara's answer, ze ezoro mochiach alav. His sash, his gartel, proves, she'ein lo elach alakecha, that he only has one garment. What exactly does that mean? So, Tosis, in the continuation, as we shall see, is going to allude to what that means, vim kain, and if so, dafka lahem. This leniency could only apply for them in the times of the Gemara. Avalonu vaday asur, but for us it's for sure asur. Afilo ein lanu al chalakechad, even if you only have one garment, we're still not allowed to launder on Chol HaMoed. She'ein anu ogden ezor al chaluko shalanu, because we no longer have this sash on our garments. V'lo havi ezoro mochiach alav, and therefore this sash or belt-like substance no longer proves that we only have one garment. V'chein tzarech lizoyer, and therefore we have to be careful as well. Shelo lechaves hametznefes b'chol HaMoed, not to wash the hat or the beret, wherever Tosfos came from, France, you know, or maybe Germany, but whatever hat it is that they are wearing, it's a cloth hat. And avagav she'ein lanu al achas, even if we only have one, because the onlookers will not know that the person only has one hat. What exactly is the meaning of Ezoro Mochiach Alav? So, some kind of hint is provided by the fact that he says it doesn't apply to us. Does that mean in the days of Tosfos they didn't wear belts at all? Maybe it didn't have a belt, but a different kind of belt. In any case, this is a machlokas between two Rashis. A Rashi in Moed Katan and a Rashi in Chulin. They point out that the Rashi in Moed Katan is not really Rashi. We have a separate manuscript from Rashi. It could be it's a student of Rashi. And Rashi in Chulin is really Rashi. So we'll start with Rashi in Chulin. Rashi in Chulin says that Ezor Mechiach Lav means the following. That the sash that was somehow fastened to the garment when it was tied around it. So when one would launder the garment, one would detach the sash. And then when the person who's doing the laundry is wearing a different garment, so he would put the sash on the new garment if he has another garment to put it onto. But if, on the other hand, he only has one garment, so he would keep the sash attached to the one and only garment because he doesn't have another one to put it on anyway. So a Zohar Mochiach Alav, according to that understanding, is that when you see someone laundering a garment together with a sash attached, it's a guarantee that he only has one garment, otherwise he would have taken it off to put on the second one. That's Rashi and Chulin. So if that would be the case, we could certainly appreciate the Tosfos that it doesn't apply nowadays, because we certainly don't have sashes that are attached to garments when we do the laundry, not when we have only one garment, and now we have multiple garments. Either way, we don't do that. Even if they had some kind of belt, but the belt, we have a leather belt, I don't know what they wore in French or German fashion, but that certainly wouldn't be put in to the laundry in any case, and therefore there would be no evidence that the person only has one garment. Rashi, Asura Rashi, and Masechta Moed Katan says a different shot. That you're not going to launder the sash with the garment. But if you have a regular garment, so which is called the chaluk, so when you wash the main clothing, you take off the sash, and then you wear a different chaluk, and you put it on your other chaluk. But if, on the other hand, you only have one garment, so that's what Tosis already deals with a little bit of Masechta Moed Katan. If you only have one garment, how are you going to do the laundry? Wear a barrel? So Rashi there writes, there's some kind of undergarment, which wouldn't be respectable to wear in public, but it covered the whole body. So a person, mitoch echreach, because he had no other choice, let's say he's doing the laundry by the river, so he would take off the outer chaluk, he would be wearing the inner chaluk, I guess it would be something like a nightgown of sorts in terms of the fact that it covered the whole body. I think Rashi calls it a miktorin, and he would perforce tie the sash around that garment that he's currently wearing, the undergarment. So when people see the person by the river wearing something which doesn't look like the outer garment with a sash on it, so that Ezor is mochiach, that obviously he's doing the laundry of the one and only chaluk, the outer garment that he has. So does that apply nowadays? So that's going to depend on what the fashions were like. If the belt or belt-like item was put on the undergarment for someone who had a chaluk echad, then that would still apply. But if, on the other hand, due to the nature of the belt or the nature of the undergarments, that wouldn't happen, then that wouldn't be relevant nowadays either. So the Beis Yosef and Siman Tov Kuf Lamed Daled, where this is discussed, has a whole discussion about this, so whether this reason still applies, and that might depend on the two explanations of Rashi. Either way, Tosis is of the opinion that this does not apply. Again, the simplest way to put it is because we no longer launder the garment with the belt, even if we only have one garment. Perhaps he's also referring to the understanding of Rashi and Moed Katan that we don't even do that nowadays. When you take off the chaluk, you don't put the sash on the undergarment when you're doing the laundry of the one and only garment. Therefore, he prohibits it. It's interesting that the Beis Yosef, after a very lengthy discussion, suggests that maybe, since in the days of Gemara, it wasn't a problem, so maybe the permit remains even nowadays. And some evidence could be adduced to that by the fact that the Rambam and the Rosh quote the halacha of one who only has one garment is allowed to launder it during Chol Hamoed, and they don't quote the caveat that it has to be only where it's a Zohar or Mochiach Alav. On the other hand, maybe in the days of the Rosh and the Rambam, that was true, so they didn't have to spell it out. So this is a debate in the Poskim as to whether you need a Zohar or Mochiach Alav and in order for this permit to apply. And bottom line, are we allowed to do laundry in Chol Hamoed for the one and only garment that one has? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes a Machlokas of Poskim about this. Okay, so now we have Tosfos part two. 6 lines on the bottom. Av mikol mekom yesh lanashim lachabes bigdei atinokos. Nonetheless, women are allowed to launder garments of minimally babies, perhaps even young children, kedei lishkov, in order that they should be able to sleep in them. The havi kamisha ain lo el cholok echad, because it's similar to someone who only has one garment. Why? Sheyesh regilus lahachlif bigdeim, because it is very common to switch their clothes. V'chol shat sarach lo, and babies, or maybe even young children, constantly need changes of clothes. And at all times, we need all of his clothes because they're constantly dirtying their clothes, so you need a fresh supply readily available. The babies or perhaps the young children can't walk around without clothes in the meantime. So that's why you're able to launder the children's garments on Chol HaMoed. Well, zeh nogu ha'olam l'chabs on Chol HaMoed, and based on this, the common practice is to launder them on Chol HaMoed. It sounds like from this Tosis that you're allowed to launder several at a time, or even the whole supply at a time if necessary, because he writes, v'chol shot tzorach lo kol begadav. That's a discussion in the poskim. When there is a permit to launder children's clothing, is it only one garment at a time, or several garments at a time, or even the whole supply? Tosis in Masechet Moed Katan notes that this particular leniency is not just our own extension of Misha Ein Lo Ela Cholak Echad, one who only has one garment, but is actually an explicit passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi. Somewhat curious why Tosis didn't reference that Talmud Yerushalmi. We alluded to earlier in our discussion, the poskim discuss whether or not this only applies to babies, who literally soil their clothes all the time, or is also referred to younger children who, in playing, also get their clothes messy, and the assumption is that it does apply, with somewhat of a debate in the poskim as to how old the child could be and still have the permit of doing laundry for their clothing on Chol HaMoed as necessary. The Gemara, in quoting a lengthy brisa, dealing with all kinds of situations where Tisha B'Av falls out on varying days of the week, and when the various prohibitions apply, the Braisa directly indicates that once Tisha B'Av passes, that you're allowed to take haircuts and do laundry. And that was a proof to Rav against Shmuel. Rav had said that the restrictions only apply the week of Tisha B'Av up until Tisha B'Av, but not afterward. And Shmuel held it applies even afterwards, so the Braisa was against Shmuel. And Shmuel points out, as a machlokas tanoim, other Braisas agree with him. So within that long Braisa, the Braisa discussed the laning on Tisha B'Av. And the Gemara quotes a machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi. The Tanakhama maintains that when Tisha B'Av falls on a Monday or Thursday, so that's the Dibur Maskil of Tosis, V'sheini V'chamishi, Korin Shalosh, Maftir Echad. You have three regular Lias and one Maftir. But if Tisha B'Av falls out on a non-regular laning day, not a Monday and a Thursday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Friday, then you would only have one Aliyah and one Maftir. And Rabbi Yossi maintains that no, that doesn't matter when Tisha B'Av falls out, you always have three Aliyahs and one Maftir. So the Tosis write as follows. Mikan mochiach Rabbeinu Tam, the Maftir ol l'minyan Shiva. From here, Rabbeinu Tam proved that the Maftir, the one who was called up, or the one who's reading the Torah in preparation for his reading from the Nevi'im, the Haftorah, that he is counted as one of the seven. Of course, the reference to seven is the Kriyas HaTorah for Shabbos. So conceptually what that would mean is that if the Maftir counts as one of the seven, so that would mean he counts as one of the whatever number of Aliyahs you have on that particular day. So if it's Yom Tov, it'll be Ola L'minyan Chamisha, and if it's Chol HaMoed, it'll be Ola L'minyan Arba, and if it's during the weekday, it'll be Ola L'minyan Shalosh. So the Gemara in Masechta Megillah, Daf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, has the machlok is about this very point, and the Gemara does not seem to have a clear-cut conclusion. So the Rishonim are scrambling to find Rayos as to how do we paskin. So Rabbeinu Tam wants to prove from our Gemara, happens to be this Gemara also appears in Megillah, in an earlier sugya, Chav Beis Amud Beis, and Tosis proves his point as follows. From the fact that the Gemara says you call up three people to the Torah and one Maftir, Shemaftir Echad Menagemu, that the Maftir is one of those three. It's not that there are three people plus a Maftir. It's the last one of those three is the Maftir. So after we finish the Tosis, we'll go back to explicate what the proof is, which seems pretty cryptic. So Tosis proceeds to say, "The Kama Boyle, Ibn Megillah, Dav Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, Mafter Olam and Yeshiva Olo." There, the Gemara has a question. Actually, it's a machlokas amaroyim whether a Mafter counts as part of the seven or the six or the five or the four or the three, depending on the day, as we mentioned earlier. So Tosis conclude and summarize Mashma Mehacha. The implication is from here the Ola, that he indeed does count as one of the requisite number. Again, the nafkamina would be, if Ola L'minyan Shiva, so you can call six Aliyahs, and the seventh Aliyah is the last Aliyah of Shabbos, doubling also as the Maftir. And during the week, you would call up three Aliyahs, and the last Ola would be a double of the last Aliyah of the three plus the Maftir. If you would hold Ein Ola L'minyan Shiva, or by extension, let's say during the week, Ein Ola L'minyan Shalosh, That would mean you'd have to call up 7 aliyahs and plus a maftir. Or during the week, 3 aliyahs plus a maftir. So Tosis point out from our Gemara that it's clear that we're calling up 3 aliyahs, the last one is the maftir, and hence that proves the point that maftir all lamin yeshiva, or in our context, lamin yeshalosh, it would be the same logic, and they would be dependent on each other. If it's all lamin yeshiva, so it's certainly all lamin yeshalosh. However, the proof of Tosis, as we mentioned, is, at least at first glance, cryptic, because maybe the Gemara here, quoting the Tanakhama on Sheni V'Chamishi, and Rabbi Yossi holds that's true for all the days of the week, Karan Shalosh Amafter Echad maybe means 3 Aliyos plus Amafter. How do you know the Amafter is the last Ola? Rabbein Atam says it without explaining. So on the margin of the Oz V'Hodor, they note that there's a more elaborate Tosis in Masechta Megillah Daf Chof Beis Amid Beis, where our sugya is quoted. Interestingly, not in the context of the sugya of whether Mafter counts for the requisite number of aliyahs or not, but in a different sugya, which is not a topic for now, has to do with how many aliyahs there are on a fast day. Are there 3, as our practice is, or are there 4? So in that discussion, the Gemara quoted the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi as to how many aliyahs there are on Tisha B'Av. And the Gemara decisively quotes this brisa to indicate, you see, there are only 3 aliyahs on a fast day. Because here it says, Koran Shalosh Amafterechem. So Tosis there on the Chof Beis Amid Beis spells out the assumption that the Gemara is making, because the Gemara Megillah there was clearly assuming, as Tosis right over here in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, that Koran Shalosh Shemafter Echad means, as we see again in the third line of Tosis, Shemafter Echad Min HaGimel, that the Mafter is the third Aliyah. That's what the Gemara was assuming there, and therefore from there it proves that there are only 3 Aliyahs on a fast day and not 4. So how does the Gemara know that? So Tosis there has the following brilliant logic. You see, within the Tanakhama, that on a Monday and Thursday, you read 3 aliyahs and maftir. So if that's all you had, theoretically the maftir is an extra aliyah. But what do you do during the, what do you do on a Tisha B'Av that falls out on a day that's not a regular Kriyas Torah day, a Monday and a Thursday? So the language of the Braisa, again quoted here as well as in Megillah, is Kori Echad Umaftir Echad. So what does that mean? Does that mean that you have one regular aliyah plus a maftir? Or does it mean that one aliyah man is also the maftir man? So to us explain that you see from the thrust of the Tanakhama that the tendency is to lessen the Kriyas HaTorah on a fast day, in this context on Tisha B'Av. That unlike a regular Kriyas HaTorah day of Monday and Thursday, we have 3 aliyos. So here the Tanakhama is allowing less aliyos when it's not Monday or Thursday. So even if you're going to assume that Kori Echad and Mafter Echad, if Tisha B'Av falls out, let's say, on Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, etc., Friday, even if that would mean one aliyah plus a maftir, that would still be less than the requisite 3 that you need for a regular Kriyas HaTorah day. So you see the tendency is to have less aliyos. So now we move to Monday and Thursday. If Tisha B'Av falls out on that day, and the halacha is, both according to the Tanakhama and according to Rabbi Yossi, that you have 3 aliyahs, umafter echad. So what would that mean? That you have 4 aliyahs, that it's 3 aliyahs plus maftir. So that would mean that you're increasing the number of aliyahs on Tisha B'Av over a regular Kriyas HaTorah day. And that's exactly against what we're doing on Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. It wouldn't be logical to assume that sometimes we're lessening the number of aliyahs and sometimes we're increasing the number of aliyahs. So therefore, based on that logic, Tosis indicates that that's how the Gemara knew that the words Koran Shalosh and Maftir Echad mean clearly that the Maftir is the last Ola. And that's how the Gemara was able to prove from there that there are only 3 aliyahs on a fast day. We pass in like a Yossi, that we always read 3. So when Yossi says, Koran Shalosh, Maftir Echad, he also means that the Maftir is the last Ola. And that is, of course, what we do on all fast days, Tisha B'Av no exception, that the Maftir at Mincha and on Tisha B'Av at Shacharis is the third Ola. So Tosis presumably is alluding to that logic without fully spelling it out. Presumably, he understood that you were aware of that Gemara Megillah, Chof Beis and Beis, that is explicitly assuming that there are only 3 aliyahs on a fast day, and therefore the only way to read Koran Shalosh Amafter Echad is that the Maftir is the last Ola. So from there we see that the Maftir is Ola Leminyan, to the count of the requisite number of aliyahs. And this is indeed what's paskin by the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch, even though it's interesting that la halacha, at least on Shabbos, when we have an option of increasing aliyos during the week, we're not supposed to increase aliyos. So on Shabbos, we try to be yotzei all the shitos by having the maftir be after the seven aliyos. And that's why we have a chatzi kaddish to demonstrate that it's not part of the regular aliyos. But when push comes to shove, such as during the week, when we have a kriyas haTorah of a fast day where we have a haftarah, I have a maftir introducing that, so therefore we cannot make more than the three aliyos that belong during the weekday, so that we have no choice but follow the Ikar Adin, the main halacha of maftir ol al minyan, and therefore the last aliyah also will be the maftir.